5 p.m. Friday. A beautiful Friday, a little bit hot, but it's beautiful because it's Friday and it's a three-day weekend. Time to celebrate a little bit. Thank you for joining us. It's time for American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, and with me, my lovely co-host, Heidi Morales. We're going to be with you for the next hour.
What a day. What a day.
Ooh, we made it. Okay, on Fridays, of course, we've been playing the Great American Songbook now for, this is week number 21, so it's part 21 in the series dedicated to the Great American Songbook, which we started a while back. I mean, we started basically with music from 1919, and now we worked our way up to what is essentially the war years. And looking back at that era, I mean, it appears inevitable now that America would become involved in the Second World War. And as horrible as that experience was, it served the purpose of unifying America behind a common cause, with assured confidence that we were the good guys. It would also become obvious that we had grown into the strongest nation in the world, which boosted confidence and pride. Music was probably never more important to American culture than it was during this era in World War II. So today we're going to feature some of the most popular songs from the Great American Songbook that kept America singing and tapping their feet during those times, with occasional updates from original hit versions. And as we'll occasionally play songs that basically are the original version of the Great American Songbook tune, but we're also going to play contemporary versions. And one thing that I like to do, of course, is to look at songs that, because it's a Great American Songbook, to find jazz versions. And that's what we're going to go in the first place for the first track. Last week, we played a song called Imagination, that was written by Jimmy Van Heusen with lyrics by Johnny Burke. We played a Dean Martin recording if you were listening last week. Well, it's the same team today, Jimmy Van Heusen and Johnny Burke, that wrote this song called Polka Dots and Moonbeams. And the version that I've got is by Wes Montgomery. Thank you. Some amazing guitar playing there from Wes Montgomery.
That was so beautiful.
Right? The track is called Polka Dots and Moonbeams. And it's one of those songs from the Great American Songbook that I have to admit ignorance of. I wasn't even aware of it. So there you go. That's what's fun about this is finding some new ones.
The other kind of great miss, the one that we miss.
Exactly, literally miss, right. Not so with this one. This one, I recognize it. It's called Taking a Chance on Love. It was from a Broadway musical originally called Cabin in the Sky. Written by Vernon Duke, with lyrics by John Latouche and Ted Fetter. The version that we've got is a short little thing by Tony Bennett.
I hear the trumpets blow again. I'm all aglow again, taking a chance on love. Here I slide again, about to take the ride again. I'm starry-eyed again, taking a chance on love. Now I thought the cards were a frame-up, and I never would try. But now I'm taking the game up, and the ace of hearts is high. Things are mending now, I see a rainbow blending now. We'll have a happy ending now, we're taking a chance. I hear the trumpets blow again, and we're taking a chance. About to take that ride again. Now I walk around with a horseshoe, and in clover I lie. Mr. Rabbit, Mr. Rabbit, of course, you better kiss that foot goodbye. I'm on the ball again, riding for a fall again. I'm gonna give my all again, taking a chance. I'm taking a chance.
You know, we've gotten 70 years of music from Tony Bennett.
Unbelievable.
Over time. I mean, just so remarkable.
Lucky us.
Yeah. This is wonderful to be a contemporary when he was around doing what he was doing. It's still pretty amazing, his history. Last week, we played a couple of songs, Heidi, if you recall, from The Wizard of Oz, as they, of course, went on to become part of the Great American Songbook. The same thing started to happen with the Disney book. The songs that were written for some of their animated films became incredible classics. This song in particular became, I guess it's the signpost of the entire Disney business. When You Wish Upon a Star represents, I mean, if you're going to name one song that basically is to represent Disney, is this not it? I mean, I remember on Sunday when they had their television show.
Wasn't that the theme?
It was the theme, right? And it's what you hear it before any Disney movie. They play that little clip from the song and everything else. Well, it was written by Lee Harline. He wrote the music. Ned Washington is responsible for the lyrics. In the movie, it was sung by a man named Cliff Edwards because he was the person in charge of playing the character Jiminy Cricket. And the song when they presented the song for the movie, it was so obvious to them that it was like a remarkable song that they basically changed the entire, like what Jiminy Cricket's role in the story of Pinocchio became front and center as
wow.
part of the story.
Interesting.
Because the song was so compelling. It was the first Disney song to ever win an Oscar. And it went on. The American Film Institute ranked it as the 7th in their 100 greatest songs in film history. So we're onto something. Only 4 Disney animated film songs even appear on the list. So this is the most highly rated song from Disney of all time. And my version of When You Wish Upon a Star will be performed by Louis Armstrong.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are, anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dream, no request is too extreme. When you wish upon a star, as dreamers do, fate is kind. She brings to those who love the sweet fulfillment of their secret longing. Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. Mama, when you wished upon a star, your dreams come true. Secret long, yes, like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. Baby, when you wish upon a star, when you wished upon the stars, makes no difference who you are, your dreams are gone by.
The genius, Louis Armstrong, of course, with When You Wish Upon a Star. Now, Heidi, when you think of like musicals that you see on TV, actually, if you see like a film version, maybe one that's
like
done
Oklahoma.
Well, I'm saying no, like like a stage musical, so that you'd imagine like if they're performing I'm thinking of like maybe the Ziegfeld Follies, that sort of thing, where there's this big monstrous staircase. And the actress comes out of the, you know, from upstairs and then just descends the staircase. And it's the ultimate symbol of glamour. That's exactly what this song was written for. There was a 1941 musical called Ziegfeld Girl. And at one point, Lana Turner gracefully walks down the stairs and looks like, you know, a goddess. While Tony Martin sings this song to her. Written by Nacio Herb Brown and Gus Kahn. It's called You Stepped Out of a Dream. And this version is by Nat King Cole.
You stepped out of a dream. You are too wonderful. What you see, could there be eyes like yours? Could there be lips like yours? Could there be smiles like yours? Honest and truly, you stepped out of a cloud. I want to take you away, away from the crowd, and have you all to myself, alone and apart, out of a dream, save into my heart. Take you away, away from the crowd, and have you all to myself, alone and apart, out of a dream, safe into my heart. Why did I lie, out of a dream?
Nat King Cole.
You know, this episode could be called Thomas Ryan Keeps It Classy.
Definitely so far with Wes Montgomery, Tony Bennett, Louis Armstrong,
yeah.
Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
I'll try to keep it up.
Good
I mean,
luck.
The thing is, like with the Great American Songbook, it's pretty easy because that's just it. It's usually some of the most classy performers who are going for this music. And now that it's like the war years, there's plenty of people to go around who have basically, you know, delved into this. Here's a good example, I think. Although it's going to be a change of pace, I certainly don't think we're doing anything to reduce the class of where we're going. This song was written by Harry Warren and Mac Gordon. Mac Gordon, the music, you know, the composer and lyricist at times. Now, every time I hear the word Mac Gordon, the name Mac Gordon, I automatically
think of your brother.
Think of my brother, whose name is Gordon Mac. So it's very natural that that would happen. But the thing is, like, he's written way more than I ever imagined when I first heard his name. I thought it was like, okay, he's part of the Great American Songbook. He's going to be on a track here and there. He was nominated for the Best Original Song Oscar 9 times in 11 Whoa. Years.
He was that a record?
Virtually every year for over a decade. I mean, that's crazy. If it isn't a record, it certainly sounds like it would be. His songs have been used in the soundtracks of over 100 films.
Whoa.
So that's that. The thing is, like, with all that being said, and like I said, and he wrote this song with Harry Warren, this song appeared in a film called Orchestra Wives, if I have that right, which I'm like, whatever that is. There was a movie called Orchestra Wives in 1942, and in that movie, there was a version of this song by the Glenn Miller Orchestra, sung by Ray Eberly. There was another film called Sun Valley Serenade, which was before that, around 41, which featured Glenn Miller and his orchestra. And it was actually the B-side of I've Got a Gal in Kalamazoo, which was a big hit. Now, okay, I don't think the song would have made the Great American Songbook just based upon that. What ended up causing that to happen is that Etta James picked the song up and sang it as the third single from her debut album, and it is now considered to be iconic. It was recently sung at basically to the President of the United States, which caused all sorts of grief because it wasn't sung by Etta James as it should have been, because well, yeah, Beyonce's great, but Etta James, this song is now associated with her. Like I'm saying, my point here, that I'm saying it a bit awkwardly, is that the song is based from a time of the early 40s, the war years, when it did get some airplay, but then it was virtually forgotten until Etta sang it in 1955. And she absolutely owned it. The song, of course, is At Last.
For you are mine at last.
You want to hear something interesting, Heidi? Is, well, of course, on Wednesday, you know, we do this song countdown or album countdown where we're doing the top, you know, the top 500, our favorite top 500 albums. And we're also picking 500 albums that never made the top 40, basically to show, like, you know, the difference and how they work together and everything else. Well, this song is like an amazing example of like what we're trying to convey on Wednesdays. Etta James, her version of the song, At Last, never broke number 60. And yet it's obviously definitive. And yet, 2 years before Etta recorded her version, the trumpeter Ray Anthony, who was a member of the Glenn Miller Orchestra, released a single of that song in 1952, and it went up to number 2. It was a huge hit in its time. Nobody remembers Ray Anthony's version. It was the hit. And yet, At Last, as sung by Etta, didn't even come close to the top 40, and yet it's the definitive version. So there you go. You know, basically, numbers mean nothing. You know, chart positions and that sort of thing. Moving on. Okay, this song, another one that's pretty much obvious. Everybody knows it. It's called Blues in the Night. Became an incredible classic of incorporating blues into the Great American Songbook. It was written by Harold Arlen, lyrics by Johnny Mercer. It was written for a film called Hot Nocturne, but by the time the song was presented, it was like sort of like the When You Wish Upon a Star story. It's like, wait a minute, this song changes everything, including the name of the movie. So the movie was, the name changed from Hot Nocturne to Blues in the Night, just based upon the strength of this Mercer, or Arlen Mercer, composition. My version of Blues in the Night is by Dr. John.
Mama don't want me do you right. Mama, she done told me about the blues in the night. Go ahead and tell it. Tell you about the blues in the night. Them two-faced women you can't trust. They snatch your bread, leave you to crust. Long white shoes, Lord, they turn to dust. God we trust. Behind the blues in the night.
Cool update. Bit of a reworking by Dr. John of Blues in the Night, the classic by Johnny Mercer and Harold Arlen. All right, well, we said we were going to basically play songs that are, some songs that are basically very representative of the fact that we're covering wartime. And this is probably one of the most, I guess, a song that is more associated with World War II than almost any other song that I can think of. Written by Don Ray, and Huey Prince. The song was introduced, I never knew this until I did a little bit of research, in an Abbott and Costello movie called Buck Privates, the comedy about the war, about America getting involved in the war at the time when, you know, that would have been just fine. The song, of course, is by the Andrew Sisters and, of course, Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, probably the biggest World War II song that we're going to ever be able to cover here.
He was a famous trumpet man from our Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowin' reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he could not jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next year the cap went out and drafted the band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. A root, a toot, a tootly attitude. He blows the H to the bar in boogie rhythm. He can't blow a note unless the bass and guitar is playing with him. The company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He was some boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. When he played boogie woogie bugle, he was busy as a busy bee. When he played, he made the company jump eight to the bar. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. Red out a tootly out a tootly out a toot toot. He goes eight to the bar. He can't blow an order for bass and guitar. Johnson, he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He puts the boys to sleep with boogie every night and wakes them up the same way in the early bright. They clap their hands and extend their feet. Cause they know how it goes when someone gets the beat. Whoa, whoa.
I didn't didn't realize I grabbed the later version of it because that was like too hot for
1941. Yeah, that was very hot. I was like, I don't remember it going quite like that.
Wow. Oh, there you go. This next song is also very much associated with the war years. And again, this is Mack Gordon and Harry Warren. They wrote this song. It became a huge hit for Glenn Miller and his orchestra. But before I play this, it's in my head. I just want to say it because we were just playing Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. Do you know that when they wrote that song, it was, like I said, it was for the Abbott and Costello movie, right? Mm-hmm. It was originally going to be given to Lou Costello to sing. But it was like, no, it's way too good. And that's when they eventually decided to let the Andrews Sisters have it. But anyway, getting back to what I was saying, Mack Gordon and Harry Warren wrote this next track for Glenn Miller and his orchestra. It was featured in a movie called Sun Valley Serenade, and it was the very first song to earn gold record status for RCA Victor in 1942. It had sales over 1 million, first record to do that. It's called Chattanooga Choo Choo, and here is the original version by Glenn Miller and his orchestra. Orchestra, of course, with Chattanooga Choo Choo. Moving on now, I felt like we covered a bunch of songs from the film Babes on Broadway already. I mean, it was an amazing thing. It was Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney together, and that was where this next song first appeared in the 1941 version of that film. So maybe I'm thinking of something else, but the song is written by Burton Lane with lyrics by Ralph Freed. It's one of those songs that, as time went by, they would change some of the lines to update different parts of it. Like, an original lyric was Franklin Roosevelt's looks give me a thrill. Eventually became Jimmy Durante's looks, you know, things like that. Basically, as it moved through time, people were able to play with the words. Here's a version where Frank Sinatra has a little fun with it. His version of How About You.
I like New York in June. How about you? I like a Gershwin tune. How about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. I like potato chips, moonlight motor trips. How about you? I'm mad about good books. Can't get my fill. And James Durante's looks give me a thrill. Holding hands in the movie show when all the lights are low may not be new, but I like it. How about you? I like New York in June. How about you? I like a Gershwin tune. How about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. How about you? I'm mad about good books. Can't get my fill. And James Durante's looks, they give me a thrill. Holding hands in the movie show when all the lights are low may not be new, but I like it. I like it. I like it. How about you?
A song that is arguably from the best album Frank Sinatra ever made. Arguable really only because he made a whole heck of a lot of really great albums. But that's off of Songs for Swingin' Lovers, a sure classic from 1955 when Sinatra recorded that.
For sure.
Okay. Johnny Mercer's back with yet another song in today's show. This time, writing lyrics with Victor Schertzinger was the person responsible for the tune, the music. It was in a movie called The Fleet's Inn. Dorothy L'Amour is the one who sang it with the Jimmy Dorsey Orchestra back in 1942 when it was released. Mercer talks about how he wrote it. It was rather interesting. And what an interesting man, Johnny Mercer. What a life he had. He actually, at one point in time, started to date Judy Garland when she was 19 years old. Which would have been fine, except for the fact that she was already engaged to the songwriter David Rose.
At 19?
Yeah.
Wow.
So eventually she ended her affair with Mercer and she married Rose. But after that, Garland and Mercer started to have an affair again.
Oops.
Later on. So Mercer basically wrote this song. He said it was his most direct expression of his feelings toward Judy Garland. I have no idea where you started it right there yet. I wanted to go on to say that's all true, but the fact of the matter is I'm playing an incredibly strange version that was recorded live from the Star Club in Hamburg, Germany, by a little group called the Beatles.
Thank you.
I played that because if you're a Beatles fan, think about this now. That was recorded in 1962, maybe just like weeks or even days before the Beatles recorded their very first single, Love Me Do. And how similar is their version of I Remember You to Love Me Do? Play those two songs back to back, side by side, and you'll say,
Think, oh man,
that's exactly where the inspiration came from. The song I Remember You, and eventually spawning a whole thing for the Beatles. How about that? At least that's in my opinion. Okay, next track up is called The Last Time I Saw Paris. It was written by Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein II. They wrote it as a single. And in 1940, there were six different versions of the song on the charts, all at the same time. It eventually ended up in a film. And as such, it actually won the Academy Award for Best Original Song in 1941, which really got the songwriters goats. They believe it or not, here they are winning the Academy Award. And they were angry because, like, we didn't write the song for the movie. It was a song. It was basically taken and put into the movie, but you shouldn't give the award to somebody for writing a song if it wasn't written specifically for the movie. So they ended up changing the rules because Jerome Kern was actually, vocal about it and obviously quite honest about how he felt about it. Here's that song, The Last Time I Saw Paris, performed by the Four Freshmen.
Last time I saw Paris, her heart was warm and gay. I heard the laughter of her heart in every street cafe. The last time I saw Paris, her trees were dressed for spring, and lovers walked beneath trees, and birds found songs to sing. I dodged the same old taxicabs that I had dodged for years. The chorus of their squeaky horns was music to my ears. The last time I saw Paris, her heart was warm. Change her, I remember her that way. The chorus of the squeak
obviously one of the biggest influences on Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys.
Oh, yes.
The Four Freshmen. The Last Time I Saw Paris. Okay, I'm going to try to squeeze in two more, so let's get to the next track. Again, it's Johnny Mercer as the songwriter, the lyric writer, with Hoagy Carmichael, who wrote the music. Carmichael originally wrote this for a project that was going to basically be a film about young men with a horn, and he based the music on a Bix Beiderbecke solo that he heard and that he loved. He didn't have any words. Johnny Mercer said he'd be happy to help, but the problem was Mercer couldn't think of anything for over a year until the song was almost totally forgotten. And at that point, Mercer started again to think about his longing for Judy Garland. And that's inspired him to write the lyrics to this song called Skylark. Here's a version as performed by Earl Hines and his orchestra with vocals by Billy Eckstein.
Shadows in the rain to a blossom-covered lane, and in your lonely flight, haven't you heard the music in the night? Wonderful music, faint as a will-o'-the-wisp, crazy as a loon, sad as a gypsy, serenading the moon. Oh, Skylark, I don't know if you can find these things, but my heart is riding on your wings. So if you see them anywhere, won't you take me there?
Two songs inspired by Judy Garland in the same show. Both, of course, with Johnny Mercer writing the words. One time to squeeze in one more. We'll do this quickly. And guess what? It's another song written by Mack Gordon and Harry Warren. This is the third song in today's show. At Last was the first, Chattanooga Choo Choo, and this song called I Had the Craziest Dream. Amazingly, the songs have almost nothing in common. There's no real thread, or stylistic thread anyway. It's like, wow, very diverse. It was originally hit for Harry James, if I didn't say that already, but the version that I'm going to play right now is by João Gilberto's wife, Astrid. It's called I Had the Craziest Dream, and I hope you have a wonderful three-day weekend and a great holiday. Take care, everyone.
I had the craziest dream last night. Yes, I did. I never dreamt it could be. Yet there you were, in love with me. I found your lips close to mine, so I kissed you and you didn't mind. there's a chance that you care.